Glad to see you back this evening as we try to wrap up. And as I said, Ed was in a meeting over there, and I said, you know, I could, he said, save him a seat. I told him, by the time he got here, he'd probably have to hang from the rafters. But I did say I could probably give you a short answer to is Islam a peaceful and peace-loving religion? And that short answer would be, well, that depends on who you are and which parts of it you read and follow, because you can find peace in some of it, and you can find violence in a lot of it. But then again, I'm not going to give just that short of an answer to the question. I want you to feel like you've gotten at least part of your money's worth. But when we start looking at whether it truly is a religion of peace, there are places within Quran, as we have read before, that say that religion is not to be forced or coerced. There are places in Quran where one is to take care of the poor, where one is to even take care of their enemies' needs the night before they may do battle. However, there are a lot of passages within Quran that push toward the taking over of the world on behalf of Islam, whether by reason or by force. Something called Shahid in the Quran, which is martyrdom for the cause of Allah, gets you automatic entrance into paradise. If you are martyred on behalf of Allah and the Quran and Islam, then you are automatically going straight to paradise, not having to wait as you do in some cases. Once again, reading from their particular their particular scriptures here. 3:164. God has conferred a great favor on the believers in sending a messenger from among them to recite his revelations to them and purify them. Teaches them the book and wisdom, for before it they were surely manifest in error. If they have remained loyal to the cause, they will find paradise, in which they will find themselves with houris and many fruits from which to eat. That is, if in particular, if they die in martyrdom. To convert to another religion from Islam, according to Quran, is perishable with instant death. Not a matter of trial. If someone converts from Islam to Christianity or Judaism or Buddhism, and their family gets to them immediately, they can, in Islamic countries, not here, but in a predominantly Islamic country, Muslim country, they can be put to death immediately with no repercussions, because it is a great sin, among the greatest of sins, to leave Islam. However, there are, as I said, places in the Quran that talk about treatment of prisoners, about who can fight and who is exempt from fighting, concerning victory. We find that those who have certain obligations to their families are exempt from fighting. We also find that when it comes to the treatment of prisoners, when you meet those who deny the truth in battle, strike them in the neck, and once they are defeated, make them prisoners, and afterwards either set them free as an act of grace or allow them to ransom themselves until the war is finally over. So in certain instances, if you do war, if you do battle, striking in the neck there does not mean cutting off their heads. Not in this particular context. But that was a way to subdue the prisoners. You strike somebody in the neck, especially from behind, and what happens? You ever been hit from behind like that? You go down to your knees. You buckle and go down to your knees. Well, then they're made prisoners and said you can afterwards either set them free as an act of grace or let them ransom themselves until the war is finally over. Thus you shall do, and if God had pleased, he would certainly have exacted retribution from them, but his purpose is to test some of you by means of others, so that you will prove whether you are compassionate and merciful or not. So there are some rules and regulations, even regarding prisoners. However, the majority of what we find in Quran and the teachings of Muhammad are otherwise. Then again, as I said to begin with, to answer the question, is it a peaceful or peace-loving religion or not? That depends on whether you proof text from those parts that are peaceful and peace-loving, or you proof text from the numerous parts of the Quran that speak of jihad. But there are two different kinds of jihad. Jihad literally means to struggle. The greater jihad is the inner struggle. Even Muhammad taught that the greatest jihad is the inner struggle that you have between yourself and Allah and the things that Allah would have you to do and the kind of life Allah would have you live in worshiping him and following all of his teachings. Actually, the battles that go out against Salman Rushdie or the great Satan, the U.S., or the little Satan, Israel, or anybody else, is considered a lesser jihad. It is a defense of the faith by violence, yet one which is sometimes necessary because ultimately the world is to submit to Allah. One of the early 20th century leaders within Islam, Al-Maududi, wrote, and I quote, "The goal of Islam is to rule the entire world and to submit all of mankind to the faith of Islam. Any nation and power in this world that tries to get in the way of that goal, Islam will fight and, if necessary, destroy." End of quote. Islam teaches that believers are to take action whenever they feel the faith is threatened. Now, what does that mean, whenever they feel when the faith is threatened? That can be bombs. It can be boots on the ground. It can be cartoons in a newspaper in the Netherlands. Yes, it can be. It can be in Christian churches. It can be in Saudi Arabia. It can be a Christian talking with a Muslim about Jesus and trying to get them to convert to Christianity. And if that Muslim turns them in or someone overhears it, that is an affront to the faith. That is an attack on the faith of Islam and an attack on Allah. And Islam says whenever you feel the faith is threatened, it is permissible to take action. Now, some of that action, as I said, is through reason. But if reason fails, even Quran teaches, if reason fails, then enforcing conformity is the proper step. Montgomery Watt, writing concerning Islam and Islam today, says there are five assertions of contemporary Muslim fundamentalists. And while there are those who are peaceful, actually what's really interesting is the majority of Muslims in the world are not even Arab. The majority of Muslims in the world are not even Arab. That's right. A lot of athletes converted. A lot of prisoners convert.
Cassius Clay went that direction.
Yes. And Jabbar went that way. Lou Alcindor.
Yeah.
And more and more, Al somebody or L somebody or whatever is appearing on the backs of NFL jerseys and basketball jerseys and those kinds of things. Actually, there are latest statistics, which I was pleased with but surprised a little bit, the latest statistics just in the last 6 months or so, the fastest growing religion in the world now is Christianity. Islam is second as fastest growing. It's only happened in the last, probably 8 to 12 months. But it's close. It's now the second fastest growing, in the world. But it is, yes.
How do they get that statistic? Praise by the God. Number of baptisms? Like, is that might not be accurate.
No. They, through interviews and through, church attendance, those kinds of things across the world, through stories, for example, there are, as I mentioned briefly last time, currently more Muslims are becoming Christian than ever before, but primarily it's not so much, they come seeking, they'll come to places that they know Christians are, seeking more information, etc., because they're having dreams where Esau appears in the dream, and Esau is the Arabic word for Jesus, where Esau appears in a dream or a vision. And just like within Judaism, and some branches of Christianity too, but within Judaism, dreams and visions were extremely important, so it's the same within Islam. I mean, after all, Muhammad gets all of his recitation in a dream or a series of dreams.
I got a question too.
Yes.
I know they've been fighting throughout biblical times, you know, before Christ.
Mm-hmm.
But why, us as a Western society, we didn't hear so much about their extremism until Ayatollah took over? Why, before then, it's kind of sheltered, more quiet?
Well, think about instant cable news and Twitter and all that. We're probably more aware of things. Plus the use of social media by all kinds of groups, Islamic and otherwise, to recruit, etc. Yeah, the Shah, he was a little more moderate. You had the Ayatollah Khomeini, who was a very right-wing religious cleric and wanted Sharia law around the world. In some ways, the Shah's, and I would put quotation marks around it, the Shah's mistake was to exile him and let him live.
Yeah.
Because sometimes they come back. And when he came back with a vengeance, and the time was ripe among, because of some of the excesses that the Shah had done, the time was ripe among folks in Iran to look for more certainty, because Islam is a religion that believes in certainty and predestination and inshallah, the will of God, if Allah wills it. Most spoken phrase in all of Islam, just about, inshallah. Well, a lot of Muslims in Iran in particular were looking for something a little more certain. And I really think, you know, you find in prisons, a lot of prisoners convert to Islam. Islam is rules-based. And there are definitive rules and regulations and penalties for those breaking those and rewards for keeping them. And you kind of keep a list, a running tally. And so I think that's a part of... I think part of the appeal for a lot of folks who are not brought up in it but then convert is all you got to do is turn on the TV and look at how chaotic the world is, and all of a sudden now you've got something here and someone telling you that if you do this, God will. You follow these rules, you'll be okay, and God will eventually conquer the world and you'll be part of the conquerors rather than the conquered. But for contemporary Muslim fundamentalists, and not all Muslims are. In fact, probably fewer, there are a lot fewer fundamentalist Muslims than there are more moderate, but at the same time, with all groups, the ultimate goal is that the world will come under the worship of Allah and the influence of Islam. First of all, there's a static worldview with no real concept that the world should develop. Surah 9, the sword chapter, some more moderate Muslims look at that and they say anybody who follows Surah 9, the sword chapter, kill the infidels, etc., that revelation was given the year before Muhammad died, so it takes precedence over others. Says anybody who follows that and believes that strongly is still locked in the 7th century. that their mindset is still locked on the 7th century and locked into the 7th century, which is when Muhammad received that. And when the expansion was by predominantly violence. People would go in and conquer. Muslim leaders would go in and conquer parts of the world, and this happened with the Ottoman Empire, conquer parts of the world, and then immediately declare Sharia law. And so all of a sudden, what law was there is done away with, and the, you know, history is written by the winners anyway, but the winners then would declare this is the only law, the Islamic law, Sharia law, and people then would, okay, your choice is you convert or you die. Or you pay the, if you're Jewish or Christian, you pay the jizya. And those kinds of things. So there's this sense that the world really, the world is developing in a negative way and there's a need to get back to the 7th century. That's basically what these fundamentalists are looking at. They believe in the finality of Islam. No further revelation is needed and no other system is possible if one is to truly follow Allah. So all other competing systems need to be done away with. Third, Islam itself is self-sufficient. It owes nothing to any other, needs nothing from any other political, economic, social, or religious system because Islam is the final revelation. Number four, Islam will produce a universal Dar al-Islam, House of Islam, backed by Sharia law. Every place that... although Sharia law functions in certain parts of Saudi Arabia and not in others. By the way, the Saud family are predominantly from the Wahhabi group. In 1700s, Ibn Abdul Wahhab was a very conservative right-wing literalist when it came to Islam and the Quran. And so he was in power in Saudi Arabia, and most of the Saudis are Wahhabi. That is, they're extremely conservative. And that's why in Saudi Arabia, women are not allowed to drive. They can't get a driver's license. They can't get educated. They have to wear at least the hijab, the head covering, if not the full burqa. And in Saudi Arabia, Christians cannot build even little bitty churches. Jews cannot build even little bitty synagogues. Christians and Jews are forbidden to talk with any Muslim about their religion, especially with the intent to try and get the person to convert from Islam, or you can be killed for doing so if you're turned in.
When those types get over here, do the radicals kind of separate from those who are more peaceful? If there's any such thing, not in other words, the
here in the United States?
Yeah, the women that drive over here and everything else, so they keep away from the women who can't drive.
Generally, yes.
So
generally, yes. What happens is, you know, you've got Sunni, Shia, and Sufi, predominantly, although there are subgroups within some of those. And the Shia are the ones with the idea of marriage for convenience, but also a strict, strict understanding of Islamic law. And while the majority of Muslims in the world are Sunni, even within Sunnis, there are those who look towards violence and Sharia. So what happens here in this country is if they are women who want to, you know, who drive, who don't wear, who refuse to wear the hijab or the burqa and those kinds of things, they typically will separate themselves. In fact, a lot of them will not even... their children will not be sent to an Islamic school. They will not go to the mosques or any of those kinds of things. They just kind of separate themselves out. Right. Yes. And so you've got this, you know, Sharia law. Muhammad himself and the history of early Islam is sanitized, according to Watts, sanitized and idealized to give a pattern for the only viable way to live life today. In other words, they sanitized. As we said last time, Muhammad's favorite wife that he married after his first wife died was 6 years old when he married her and 9 years old when he consummated the marriage. He married others that were 11 and 10, etc. But typically within Islam, they won't talk about the ages and that kind of stuff. They'll just talk about how wonderful he was and all this kind of stuff, and how he sought to build the family and et cetera.
Do you have an age limit now, boys, marriage goes?
Oh, not within the Shiite Muslims. No, there's no. If they can get away with it without getting caught, but if they get reported, then. Right. But a terrorist is defined by Brad Hoffman. A terrorist is defined, and I quote, and not just Islamic terrorist, a terrorist period. Someone for which violence is first and foremost a sacramental or divine duty executed in direct response to some theological demand or imperative. End of quote. Christian terrorists. They're doing it on behalf of God. Jewish terrorists on behalf of God, Islamic terrorists on behalf of God. The terrorist sees it as a divine act and a divinely sanctioned act. It's not just a mission in the name of God, but it originates. And we've seen this in some Christian terrorist groups out there, smaller, but even in the time of the Inquisition, the overall belief was this originated in the mind of God. This is what God wanted, and that's where the Islamic terrorist is. It's not just something that they do in the name of God. It actually originated in the mind of God, and God, in God's mind, God wants them to do this, and God's telling them to do this, and therefore they're fulfilling a direct order from God. Now, we have had our time in Christian history where we weren't so great and wonderful. But on the one hand, you've got Christianity that teaches, turn the other cheek and those kinds of things, even though that has been abused in different ways or we overlook it. On the other hand, you've got a religion that has much more of the ancient, even the ancient Hebrew flavor of kill them all, let God sort them out kind of thing. And so that's what you find here with, especially within the Islamic terrorists. And I used to say primarily it was Shia. But Saddam was a Sunni who took it the other way. Well, that's true. And there were a lot of Shia in Iraq. And while he did kill Sunni that opposed him, he predominantly targeted the Shiites. But he also targeted certain Christian groups as well. A. Christian Gorder writes, though, when we try to talk of Islam, well, before I get there, Hassan al-Banna, who was the founder of the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt last century, and the forerunner of Al-Qaeda, and subsequently the Taliban. By the way, Taliban comes from the word Talib, which means student of religion, just as the Zealots use the religion in Judaism for their political end, so the Taliban is using religion for their political end. But Al-Qaeda, the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, the Taliban, ISIS, look back to Hassan al-Banna, who wrote, Allah is our objective, the messenger is our leader, Quran is our law, jihad is our way, dying in the way of Allah is the highest hope. That is, dying, performing this on behalf of Allah. But Christian Van Gorder writes, and I quote, framing the Muslim in here, and especially now, we're at Easter and we're talking about Jesus' sacrifice, and we're talking about his love, and we're talking about Christ's care and focusing on that. Van Gorder says, framing the Muslim-Christian interaction with the question, do we worship the same God, is far too simplistic. It's more helpful to ask what kind of God is revealed in Christianity and what kind of God is revealed in Islam. Though the traditions agree that God is one, they diverge widely on how that oneness is expressed. This fact is vital for Muslims. How do you express the oneness of God? It's vital for Muslims. And an important starting point for dialogue. Christianity begins with God is love. Right? That's one of our primary foundational statements. God is love. Islam teaches God is one. Not God is love, God is one. Christianity calls individuals to enter a covenant relationship with God. Islam calls individuals to worship, to worshipfully assume a proper place and position of obedience before God's will and revelation, regardless of what that is. So they see, and they see any affront to Islam as being against the will of Allah and His revelation. End of quote. But you know, Muslims, probably the biggest place that Muslims and Christians disagree is on what? With the biggest place Muslims and Christians disagree. Jesus. Because Islam says there is one God and one God only, and within Islam they say, oh, there can't be God in three persons, and God would never become human. God would never come in the flesh. Of course, Judaism said God would never come in the flesh. But Islam says that actually when Christians talk about God the Father, God the Son, God the Holy Spirit, we're talking about what? Three different gods. We're not monotheists. We're not monotheists any longer. That's in their estimation. They do not conceive and cannot conceive of this God as one and yet three distinctive purposes and functions and persons. And we will continue to disagree. To Muslims, Jesus was merely the greatest of the prophets other than Allah. Jesus was taken to paradise and did not die. Therefore, if Jesus did not die, there could be no resurrection, and Christianity falls on its face. Yes, Susan.
Well, how does that rationalize that if he's the greatest prophet? When he says, you know, if someone hits you on the cheek, give them the other cheek, how do they rationalize his peaceful nature if they think he was a great prophet and a great teacher?
Right. Well, and that's very good. Yeah, that's a very good question. And they would see Jesus' teaching of turn the other cheek, being compassionate and showing compassion, but once you turn the other cheek, you've run out of cheeks. And if someone offends you and you've run out of cheeks, you don't continue to turn the other cheek and turn the other cheek and turn the other cheek. If someone goes after you, if someone offends you, if you do turn the other cheek, as Jesus says, and they continue to offend you, because you've shown them grace and compassion, and they continue to offend you, and that offense could be something physical. That offense could simply be to continue to teach that Jesus is Son of God, and that Christianity is the way to salvation. Then it's up to you to cause them to submit or to destroy them. Right. Right. You don't fight them. You dust. Yeah, you kick the dust off. That's true.
Dust off and move along.
That's true.
I can't see how the Muslims could honor Jesus as a prophet and a teacher if they don't.
What is their literature on Jesus? Do they use the Gospels or they make up their own?
Well, the Quran mentions Isa. Mentions Isa only 13 times by name, but then refers and inferences to Jesus a total of 97 times in the Quran. There are references there. Muslims are encouraged to read the Torah of Moses, the Psalms of David, and the teachings of Jesus, and to follow those unless the teachings found therein are in contradiction to what Quran or Muhammad says. What they would say is if you translate it or you begin to interpret it, you have now corrupted the text. And you've corrupted the message. And therefore, in their estimation, each of the great prophets comes along. Moses comes along to correct misunderstandings and corruption from what God gave to the people through Abraham. David has to correct, with the Psalms, David has to correct the way Judaism misinterpreted and corrupted the teachings of God, Allah, through Moses. Jesus' teachings correct the way that people have misinterpreted and corrupted the teachings found in the Psalms of David or the teachings of Solomon. And now Muhammad has come along to correct. As I said the other week, Ed, you and some others and those guys would get along great because they hate Paul. No, not that you hate Paul, but they hate Paul because they say, you know, Paul is the one who began corrupting the teachings of Jesus, and Christians follow Paul more than they do Jesus. Therefore, Muhammad had to come along to correct the corruptions of Jesus' teachings by Paul and others who followed him. Yes, Jim?
If Muhammad's greatest prophet, Jesus, per se, stepped down, why did they also believe Jesus would be the one to come back and not Muhammad?
Well, and I've asked that question before, and they said that's because Quran says it and Muhammad says so. That Jesus did not die. He was taken up, and there are two different strands in Islam as to who actually died on that cross. Somebody died. And in one strand, it is Simon of Cyrene, who looked like Jesus, and therefore the Romans were confused. Allah confused them, and they got the wrong guy. There is a group that says it was actually Judas. When Judas was hanged on a tree, hung himself, that Judas is the one who was actually hung on the tree rather than Jesus because they looked similar. And Allah caused Judas to be placed in Jesus' place and caused the Romans and others to not understand. So Jesus then was taken up to be with Allah in paradise, and he is waiting for the proper time when Allah decides it's time for him to come to earth. And when he does so, he will tear down all crosses. He will become Muslim. Tear down all crosses to declare that Christianity is not true, but only Islam. He will kill all pigs. That's the four-legged pigs. Because pork is verboten. He will get married and have children and fulfill the role that he should have had. Except all this stuff started happening and people who had corrupted the teachings of Moses and of David were trying to have him killed. And so Allah rescued him. And then when it comes for final judgment, what's really strange is, and I've asked questions, I've said, well, then why is he the one that's going to assist Allah in judging instead of Muhammad if Muhammad's so great, if Muhammad's greater than him? Because that is the will of Allah. That's basically the answer I get, because that's the will of Allah. Right. And for them, Jesus is simply a prophet taken to paradise and whose return will signal that the end of time is on its way. For Christians, Jesus is God incarnate, Son of God, the Messiah, the Savior, who died and was resurrected for our sins. Muslims say Jesus wasn't crucified, therefore he couldn't be resurrected because he didn't die, and Christianity falls apart.
In other words, they don't believe the part of Timothy question that Jesus ever shown was.
No, and what they would say is that those things were added later and corrupted because of the teachings of Paul. So ultimately, the goal of Islam is to unite the entire world as a house of Islam. Anyone who refuses is in the house of war. And that war can be waged against you in a peaceful way through reason. For those who choose to read portions of Quran that push no coercion in religion, but use reason, use logic, use your teachings to convince them that their way is wrong. Or through violence and coercion if the other doesn't work. Yes, Susan?
You know, one thing that perplexes me is when our nation was founded, and it was founded on freedom,
right.
There was not a rush of Muslims to America. So the people that were coming in were all either Protestant or Catholic for the most part.
Protestant, Catholic, and Jewish. Right.
And so now it's anachronistic for them to take that document and hold it up for Muslims. And now we do celebrate freedom of religion.
Right.
I'm not opposed to that. But I wonder when I hear the news sometimes and hear commentators, do they really understand what Muslims are after? Do they really know that Muslims don't believe in freedom of religion? They do not believe in accepting Christians into their country. In other words, if you went over there, they would shut you out, like you said, we're in a church, you can't start a church. So I think there's basically an educational, philosophical thing that's, you know, a little knowledge is a dangerous thing.
Right.
If you don't know enough about them. Why are you defending them so mildly? Because you're just letting this group come in that's going to annihilate everybody who doesn't believe like they do.
Well, and if you look at a lot of that that shows up, man, it's a very good point. But if you look at a lot of what's showing up in the media and other things, a little bit of knowledge, yes. I think there's also the fear factor.
Yeah.
If we're too harsh, then we might be another Charlie Hebdo or something like that. I also think that a part of it is there is such a backlash against certain religions in the world among a lot of groups, in particular a lot of groups that have influence in media these days, that what's really interesting and I think ironic is that Christianity talking about Jesus as the way is such an affront and an offense, and Islam saying this is the only way with Allah is let to slide.
Yeah.
And
it is. The dialogue of what you say is true. If you're a Christian and people stand up for that, somehow you're a bigot. I mean,
right.
you're just a horrible person. Whereas a Muslim who says, I'm going to kill you if you don't agree with me, let's give them, free passage and right to speak. I'm not really clear.
Well, there's definitely a disconnect.
I'm thinking, Muslims are either liars or they're not a Muslim. They say they are. If they're found bottom line, you across one say, if I don't convert to being a Muslim, are you going to kill me? If he says no, he's out to be a liar to a certain extent. If you're
a Christian. If you say you're gonna stay a Christian and he says okay, then fine, when we take you over, then you're gonna have to pay the jizya or convert.
And that's what Susan said when we talked about a few weeks ago. This is not getting on the news.
No.
The bottom line is they're going to take over the world no matter what.
Yeah.
Well, that's because they have been taught that according to the revelation straight from Allah to Muhammad in one of his visions, is that all he was charged, he and his followers were charged with converting the entire world to Islam, and the entire world was to follow the teachings of Allah.
See, they love Jesus. When Jesus asked the rich young ruler, or the rich young ruler said, what do I have to do to convert? And Jesus said, sell your stuff. And he said, can't do it.
Right.
Jesus didn't run after him and drag him by the hair and say, no, you're going to be a Christian. He said, I'm sad. He walked away sad. Can't they just walk away sad?
No. Because they feel they have the divine. Whereas Christians, God is love, compassion, grace, but you have the opportunity to follow God or not, and if you don't, then it's on you at the end, but God's going to continue to try to get you to with grace and love in all kinds of different ways, give you every opportunity possible. But in their particular case, God is one, God is to be worshipfully obeyed almost to the point of slave and master kind of thing. And if you don't, we've been charged. We are, it's kind of like the zealots thought that they were going to be God's warriors to impose God, what they thought was God's will, get rid of the Romans and all this kind of stuff. And we're going to have a revitalization of the kingdom of David, the warrior kingdom of David. And that would bring about a golden age where of peace. Well, the peace was by the sword. It always amazes me that so much of history in the world, peace is kept by the sword, or the threat of the sword, not because peace is the right thing to do, and that kind of thing. So they're very much like the zealots. We're going to do this, and we're going to use the sword to accomplish it, and therefore there will be peace on the earth because we have the threat of the sword. I don't know. Jesus says, blessed are the meek, for they will be the ones to inherit the earth. Blessed are you when men revile you and persecute you and say all manner of things evil against you falsely. Rejoice and be glad, for so they did to the prophets. Well, they also killed them. But, there's a different... a different way of looking at God and the will of God for the earth And on the one hand, and we've had, you know, Torquemada once again. You know, oh yes, you're gonna have peace in God's kingdom, or we're gonna send you out of the world. But for the most part, within Christianity, there is this sense of, you know, it's sadness if you don't come. It is not the will of God that any should perish, the writer says. And yet God gives us the ability to choose to perish or not. And within Islam, it's not the will of Allah that any should choose not to follow Allah. And if they do, then they deserve to die because they're an affront to Allah. And then I think of sinners in the hands of an angry God that scared a lot of people in. And so, you know, we have those.
But they didn't kill anybody.
No.
They might have hit him on the head with a stick or woke him up or something. They might have, you know, tried to terrify him like a boogeyman story. But it wasn't.
And within the history of Christianity, the sword comes up, and ultimately the sword falls and peace reigns. And it's because of the peace and the grace and the forgiveness that the sword falls.
I know in the,
but here the sword comes up and stays up.
In Revelation, you know, he speaks of the Antichrist and all this stuff. But nowhere in the Bible does it predict somebody like Muhammad Christ or nothing like that.
Well, the Muslims say that when John the Baptist is speaking of one that will come after him that is greater, yes, that is Jesus. But then when Jesus says that there, you know, when Jesus talks about God being one and that there would be a great one yet to come, that's Muhammad.
Okay.
That's how they interpret that from Jesus' teachings. That Jesus predicted the coming of Muhammad. Well, it's Christianity. Christianity is, but it's not by leaps and bounds. And what's really interesting is in different parts of the world, the Christianity that's growing in Latin America, it's not as much within the Roman Catholic Church as it is within Pentecostal tradition. In Africa, in Christianity, the fastest growing denominations are those that are Pentecostal. I have a theory as to why, but they're the fastest growing ones. In the United States right now, the fastest growing Christian denominations among college and young professionals, I said this several weeks back, and it's a little bit surprising, Roman Catholicism and the Orthodox Church are growing faster than any other denomination.
You said Pentecostals run faster in Africa. Ain't Africa also a big Muslim country?
There are, and Islam within in certain parts of Africa. But once again, Jesus says, if you live by the sword, you're going to die by the sword, and there's going to, you know, the kingdom is, that he came to bring is one of peace and forgiveness and love. And Muhammad, basically, though he talks about unity and peace to begin with, then he gets ticked off that people don't see him as the final great one, and so violence is okay. And so on the one hand, you've got a kingdom that's based on love and forgiveness, and on the other hand, you've got a kingdom that's based in the sword and action. Yeah, and checking off the list. And the only list we really need to check off in Christianity has to do with our acceptance of Christ and then living a life correspondingly, as he did. Depends on who you are. Depends on which part of it you're in. Depends on which part of Jim, but I would say overall more Muslims are violent than not. But thank you all. God bless you. Go in peace. And I'll look to see you, I hope, on Wednesday night and then again Friday night.